Hello and welcome to the Board Gaming Podcast, episode number 181. I'm the host, Will Wilson, and with me is Peter Willington.
Hello.
And Keith Andrew.
Hello. You're not going to welcome me back or anything more than just saying my name?
Because I was actually going to do that, but you...
No. It
doesn't sound right.
Well, you can cut that bit out, can't you? Yeah.
I can't now. I've spoken over it. Welcome back, Keith.
Is that it?
I'm not going to cut that out.
Keith, are you feeling better?
Well, I guess. I've got a headache today. I've still got the sniffles. I've still got the colds. This has been like the best part of a month.
You know what I've got at the moment?
We've lots of things, probably, but we probably shouldn't
go. I've got a beer!
A beer?
Really? I've got a delicious energy drink, which... I might try and drop several names throughout the course of the show to see whether or not I can be sponsored by them, because I spend so much money on them. But
if I can tell if you're dropping the name in, then I will sound the buzzer.
I'm sponsored by Waitrose, and
get that buzzer out.
I've got two cups of tea because I'm in the habit these days of liking tea so much that when one's finished, I think, oh, I want another one. So now I make two at a time.
Sounds a bit like me with whiskey.
Only not as cool.
Only I normally have about three or four lined up.
Might start wearing cardigans soon, I'm not sure.
I noticed, because I was doing research, because Apple's birthday? No, it's iPhone's birthday this week. So we got a few features coming out when this podcast comes out. But as I was researching one of them, I noticed that I started listening to old podcasts. You'll probably work out why when you see my article, but I found out that the podcast I started in was podcast 85, which means I'm four away from my 100th birthday.
Okay.
I thought this was going to be something to do with iPhone, but no, it's something to do with you.
Selfish. What do you get?
I believe that makes me the longest serving Pocket Gamer podcast member.
What do you ever get?
To be honest, it's like being the longest serving Home Secretary
really in the universe.
Don't take much, really, does it?
What do you get somebody for their 100th podcast? Is it, what is it, diamond?
Yes.
Or platinum? Or...
Yeah, no, both.
Angry Birds?
No, not Angry Birds. Unless it's made of platinum and diamonds.
Yeah.
So as I've written on the notes this week, you all better bake me a cake or suit in.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So you better do that.
Mm-hmm.
Our reviews editor's the guy who makes cakes, isn't he? So
he is, yeah. Oh, you'll also see that today, in the future, for when we're recording, listeners. So watch out for that. That's on the website. Anyway, let's go straight to the news.
News!
Welcome to the newsroom. Well, what's left of the newsroom after the strikes the previous week?
There were strikes.
Yeah, there were strikes, and there's not really.
Go on.
There's now only a single desk in the middle of the room. That's what I was going to say. Because they can't see it. You've got to visualize. You know, you've got to express what's in front of you.
I was going to say this is what happens when I go away. You can't control whatever their names were. I forgot what their names are. Janet and Steve? I don't know. What were they called?
Janet, Steve, Karen, of course, although we don't talk about Karen anymore.
No. Not after the lawsuit.
She's still sending me emails. So just a single desk with a typewriter with red rum written on it. I think that's a reference to a commercial. First up is Clash of Heroes has been confirmed as coming to iOS and Android.
This is what you've been talking about for the last...
Yes! Oh, well, to be fair, yeah. We sort of found out through other means about 3 weeks ago, prior to E3.
Through other means?
Yeah, through other means.
What do you mean journalism?
that's the one.
Someone or what? What do you...
But,
written on a toilet wall?
We're sworn to secrecy, alas. But now we can reveal it. So there we go. So yeah, Might and Magic Clash of Heroes is heading later this year.
Is this popular?
Yeah.
It's not popular, which is why it's so good that it's getting another release. Because... It came out on the DS, I think. Did I do the review for this?
No, I reviewed it.
Did you really?
I reviewed it. It's one of my 3DS reviews. The other ones I reviewed were Agatha Christie's The Orient Express and Lego Rock Band.
Oh, well, you did well there. I'm sure I've played it. Anyway, and it's superb. It's like a puzzle game. It's nothing like the RPGs on which it's based. It's got a beautiful anime aesthetic, very chibi. And it came out on 360 first and then came to DS, and everyone was just kind of thinking, why is this, why have you bothered? Why is this not on iOS?
DS first.
Was it DS first?
Yeah, DS first. It was about a year before the 360. Ooh. It didn't sell well on DS because no one buys third-party games on DS.
Yeah.
So then they went to the 360 and did it on digital platforms and Steam. And then no one really bought it there. But all the console sites then realised it was a great game and they were like raving. Now it's finally come to mobiles.
This is third time lucky then, is that what you're saying?
Third time lucky, yeah.
I hope so, because it is genuinely very good. Is it Cappy?
It is Cappy Games, yeah.
This isn't a rook.
No, it's a puzzle game. It's a puzzle hybrid. It's like a strategic version of Bejeweled. You'll actually probably like it, Keith.
Maybe I should get this.
It's don't be put off by the anime graphics.
Oh no!
But the actual gameplay itself is really, it's like a tactical Bejeweled. It's really quite clever.
People with big eyes and big mouths.
Alas, yes. But. I should move on before there's a fight. Rovio has unveiled more details about Amazing Alex, which is the next game. This one's published by Rovio, though, rather than developed, isn't it?
Well, I think they bought the assets.
I beg your pardon.
The thingamajigs, and now they're going to put them in a slightly different order, and you know,
the makers of Casey's contraptions, basically.
Well, yeah, but I don't think they're actually making it, are they? I think they literally bought the game from them, and I don't think they have actually anything to do with it anymore, as I understood it. I might be wrong, but kind of going from their tweets at the time when they were talking about it, everyone said, "Oh, it's a clone," and then suddenly they realized, "Oh no, they've actually bought it." But, I was under the impression they'd kind of bought the game and the IP and all its assets, and they were Rovio were kind of now reimagining it.
Casey's Contraptions, The Amazing Machine.
Right. Yeah. What?
You know that old game from the early 90s?
Oh, but they're all like that, aren't they? Yeah.
Well, that one's the first one. Just
there's
saying.
Loads of ones like that, aren't there?
Yeah, I know, but they're all based on that one.
Yeah. Right. Which, so you're saying they should have bought that instead?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
It didn't have a cute blonde boy that they could put on the cover, did it?
Could have made up one. I mean, you know, they've got enough parts. With, you know, if they bought Amazing Machine.
I don't know. Yes.
Anyway, so we got the... there's a video just been released, so you can see that on the website. It doesn't show you any gameplay, but it does have a tennis ball. Yeah, it's 35 interactive objects and puzzles. So there we go. It should be out this summer.
We've got Windows down here as well, but I bet you that is actually Windows.
I bet you it is actually Windows. Yeah. Mm. Windows 8.
Yeah, I would suggest that.
Almost certainly going to be a launch title for Windows. Anyway, let's move on. Novarama has said that freemium game developers are degrading the whole industry. When you buy an app, it's not a game. You think it's a game, but it's not. It's a renting scheme.
Yeah.
Sanchez Crespo, who's got an awesome name, said that via a translator. He went on to explain his mistrust as the taxi model. When I see Farmville and Uncharted both called games, it really gives me the creeps.
Really? Because this story makes me really angry. I guess we're in two different minds, aren't we, Mr. Crespo?
I think I'm about to be over here. It says to you, Peter, I think we are.
Yeah. But in Spanish accent, don't do it.
I thought that was it.
For a translator.
Uh-huh. Oh, right. Sorry. Yeah, of course. So this is an interesting story, isn't it, after last week's?
Keith won't know what happened last week because he never listens.
I don't listen to you guys. What happened last week?
So basically, EA came out and said, you know, was it EA? Yeah. EA came out and said, like, you know, in about a decade, free-to-play games are going to be the standard. They're going to be the norm, and actually paying for content up front is going to be the kind of sideline.
In fairness, after they said that comment, Peter Moore then started cackling and then just dived into a pile of money.
Yeah. I was on the side of he's right, and it's probably a good thing. And Will and James were not. And yeah, so
I was more on the fence actually.
Yeah, you were.
I was just trying to stir the pot.
I know. I'm painting you in a bad light. I've got two questions about this. One, who is he to say what the definition of a game is? And two, are we really going to take advice from somebody who made Invisimals and Reality Fighters? Is this really the industry person that we go to for advice? Those two really, really well-selling games? Like, no. No, sorry, Novarama CEO.
I can imagine what James said, because within the previous conversations on this podcast, he's not a big fan of freemium, is he?
No.
I think actually what this guy says here applies to bad freemium games, which I would actually say the likes of Farmville are. I think they're a good starting point, but I can't imagine that in 5 years' time people will be playing those kind of things anymore. It was a kind of learning ground, and like everyone kind of forgets, it's kind of almost by accident this kind of thing has come around. But I do think it's right that I wouldn't even say it's going to be 10 years' time. I would say about 5 years' time. At some point with the next home consoles, there'll be far more leaning to giving developers the flexibility to charge what they want. And I would imagine within a good 5 years, if not shorter, that the norm for a large majority of games will not be to charge up front. But the problem is, and I think we've said this on this before, you've got to get over this name of freedom and free-to-play that has this baggage attached to it now because of games like
I don't think free-to-play has the same amount of baggage, which is, I think, why quite a lot of people now call their games free to play rather than freemium. Free to play more in the mind for me anyway, that conjures up stuff like Team Fortress, Tribes Ascend, Lord of the Rings Online, PC games.
I don't think it does for most people. I think for most people they're interchangeable. I mean, they kind of technically are interchangeable. It depends what you judge. It actually depends how you charge for what you charge for, whether it's stuff that's essential or whether it's stuff that is periphery.
The interesting thing about this news piece is that he uses the phrase degrading the industry. Degrading. Making it worse. Surely the word isn't degrading, it's changing. That's what it's doing. It's not necessarily making it worse, and it's not making it better. It's just changing it. And that's what the games industry has done for the last 30 or 40 years. You know, it's been constantly
evolving. The current model is not. I think everyone's agreed that the current model of games development isn't sustainable in the long run, unless you just want a few monolithic publishers controlling everything, which I guess is what's happened basically. But you can't. There's so little. There's less and less in terms of sales and retail, and beating their margins because of the increasing costs. So they've got to. It's got to change in a way.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Well, the number of people I've seen at talks now were literally. The idea that a game costs 40 quid to buy, I mean, it's a nonsensical number. It's just a random number that was kind of the industry settled on. It doesn't actually mean anything. It's not like a physical thing where, a shop makes something and you've got to pay for the people who made it, the materials, and the to get it to the shop. I mean, there is logic to that cost. With a game, all right, you've got the actual kind of physical disc or whatever, but the price you're paying for the number of people going to buy it, £40 means nothing. It's just the price that was settled on it. And I think the best thing about all of this is that it encourages people to think more about how they charge, rather than just saying, right, a game is £39.95 and that is it. I mean, because it's daft. It doesn't mean anything. So if that's what comes out in the long run, that people are much more flexible in the years to come to charge what they want or charge what they think is going to be effective, rather than just saying it's got to be this or the other, that's a good thing. But
looking again at the PC side of things, I think it's quite interesting whenever Valve have spoken about what happens during Steam sales, because I think that would that goes, I mean, this is basic economic, right? I know I've spoken about this before. It's like one of the economics lessons I remember really well for some reason. But it's a basic graph. I mean, like the price of something as it goes down, the demand for it goes up. And at some point, that price and demand is at the sweet spot where you actually make the most profit, even though your price is lower than, you know, it's the lowest or that you can get with that amount of profit. And they were saying, and Valve keep stressing the fact that these Steam sales, rather than being the death of the industry, which like EA tried going on about and then they did it themselves, incredibly, you know, I would imagine it's not hypocrisy because probably that was like the guys in this department not realizing the guys in that department were doing that. So, or guys and gals, I'm not suggesting they're just stuffed with men.
Sexist.
Oh no. But yeah, but the thing is, they Valve has stressed time and time again that they actually get so much more sales at a lower price point as to make the higher price point less profitable, even though it's less money.
It does work the other way though, like the kind of, what I mean, the kind of flexible nature. That if you can imagine, if say Activision had launched the very first Modern Warfare or without maybe the very first Call of Duty or whatever at a price point of £15, say, then I would guarantee you it wouldn't have sold as much because people would have stumbled across that box. Anyone who hadn't played, you know, the beta or whatever would have stumbled across that box and assumed it was some crappy budget game. And they wouldn't have bought it. There is a kind of, in some cases, there is an argument that this price premium, not just in games, but everything.
True, but I don't think that applies for digital.
No, well, it's not necessarily the medium. I mean, because if the next Modern Warfare was digital only, that wouldn't impact it really. They could still charge £40 for it.
Yeah, the demand is through the roof.
Games like that, I mean, this is what some people are saying. I mean, we ran a story, on, I think it was earlier this week, that there is still value in the 99p plus on the App Store because it still carries that weight of this game must be good because they're going to charge for it. And that has a certain, depending on the game, of course, and maybe the developer as well who's behind it, that still can actually attract people now because everything else is free.
Square still charges £10.99 for Final Fantasy III.
Yeah, that's a slightly different story though. And I was almost tempted to buy it the other day. So I'm part of the problem.
Infinity Blade. Let's move on. Let's walk into the murky realm of paid games which have IAPs. Infinity Blade, Epic has said, was for them the most profitable game they've released in terms of the amount of man hours it took to make the game when compared to their console releases. So the amount of money they spent effectively making it compared to how much they made, it was most profitable. It beat Gears of War and all their many other franchises made with the Unreal Engine, like Unreal and Unreal Tournament.
they're literally, that's it then, isn't it?
That is it, actually, yes. There's quite a few franchises. Games in those two series, though. But that's about it, yes. Have you noticed they all always star main characters and quite large armor. Anyway, so there we go. Yeah, it's the most profitable game we've ever made in terms of man hour years invested versus revenue.
I mean, they have said something like that before. I'm not quite sure why there was such a big surprise. I remember like a year ago we covered something where they said that. And then they went, as they have done actually since this went live, to lengths of clarifying exactly what they meant, which is entirely obvious what they meant, as you've just said twice. What it says is man years invested versus revenue, which is what you kind of gauge it would be. Not saying it's made the most money.
Yeah, yeah.
But in terms of what it costs to make and in man hours and costs and what they made, it's the most profitable.
That's technically most profitable.
It is technically. Yeah. So, they panicked, I think, after this story went live that suddenly you find them clarifying something that they'd already clarified. It's not you. I mean, you couldn't fit that in the headline. That would be a ridiculous headline. So.
I know. Yeah. No. Precisely. I mean, but it's funny. It strikes me as weird. It's like people don't understand what profitable the word means, rather than, you know.
No, it was thinking of sales and
more money. Yeah, I guess they just think purely on terms of black and white. This made more money than it did in terms of, but in comparison, relative amount. Anyway, so yeah. And of course, they said they continued. Epic are very much. They're sort of standing on a few stools at the moment here, because one side they're pushing console manufacturers and going, oh, we're pushing them to make the tech better. Yeah. And on the other side, they're constantly going, mobile tech's going to beat consoles in a few years. It's kind of a bit weird. I don't know which side they're banking on.
I suspect that they've got enough money to kind of you know, put it into a lot of different pots, you know.
I think they bank both ways.
Absolutely. They.
That's a lot of banking.
So much. The it's got very hot in here. But they
sorry, you know, I'm just taking off my t-shirt.
Okay, I'm already completely nude. But Epic have they've always pioneered with technology and experimenting with different sort of profit models and that kind of thing. So it's really good to see them, you know, come out and go, yeah, we made this smaller game and it looks amazing and it's AAA and it, you know, it got so much press, but it didn't take us that long and we made a whole bunch of money off of it in comparison. And I think that this really is a wake up call to the Gears of War games, you know, to the old model of we're going to spend 3 years doing this and then on with a massive team and roll the dice and sort of take the gamble that it's all going to pay off.
Interestingly, a lot of the artists from the Gears of War games are working on Infinity Blade Dungeons, because I spoke to one of them. The art lead was one of the people working on Gears of War.
Really?
Yeah. I asked him how much of the team is ex-Gears of War people, and he said, well, you know, pretty much most of us.
Wow.
So it's it certainly shows the artwork on that game is amazing.
Hmm.
But anyway, yeah. Well, there we go. So, Infinity Blade made more money than Gears of War. Google has announced the Nexus 7. I don't know if anyone noticed this this week. You notice they didn't announce any Nexus 6s, because that would have meant we'd have had to have employed a new department and the police force to hunt them down. But yes, the Nexus...
What is that in reference to? Is some geeky thing?
It's in reference to the classic sci-fi cult film starring Harrison Ford, Blade Runner.
Oh, God, not Blade Runner. Oh,
well, but Philip K. Dick's estate actually tried to sue Google for calling their phones the Nexus, because, of course, if it goes like Nexus 2, Nexus 3, eventually it'll get to Nexus. In fact, Nexus 4, 5, and 6 are all featured in the book and the film. But only in passing in the film.
Nobody. I haven't seen it and I don't get it.
Oh, you haven't seen Blade Runner. You've got to see Blade Runner. Keith hates Blade Runner.
Awful.
Which means it's amazing.
Most hype movie in history with a really simple, stupid concept that intelligent people like to think is really deep.
It is really
it's
deep.
It's like The Matrix.
You'll love it. Peter, like you'll love it.
I like The Matrix.
Oh, what's the stupid one with dreams? Oh, what's that?
Oh, what, Dreams May Come?
No. Is it the one Scanner Darkly?
Inception?
Inception, I'm thinking of
Inception. Oh, that was good as well. Oh, I'm going to watch Blade Runner.
Yeah, you've got to watch Blade Runner.
Oh, God.
See, remember, Peter, the golden rule is if Keith doesn't like a TV program or film, you're probably going to like it.
Nobody likes Inception. Oh, God.
I like Inception.
Oh, it's awful. It's a terrible movie. It goes well, it's not actually. I laughed a lot at it, but I don't think I was meant to. Yeah, Nexus 7.
Nexus 7. They revealed it. It's $199.
It's made by Asus.
It's made by Asus. Asus, as they kept calling it. Which
is tech.
Yeah, it's $199 or about £159, I think, for an 8GB model. Do you think it's going to be a threat to the iPad? It's an Android 4.1 tablet, 7-inch.
No.
No,
this is like Google have watched Amazon not as much success as people think they've had actually, but a reasonable amount of success with Kindle Fire in the US, and have thought this is something we can deploy quite easily, and people, I have a thirst for 7-inch tablets. Let's do one, and I suspect that it will take a lot of business away. Not that you can get Kindle Fire over here yet, but it will take a lot of business away from Kindle Fire. It won't have any impact on iPad at all, because anyone who wants an iPad, and they don't want a balked Android thing.
Yep.
So it's not going to do anything. And it's really tacky looking as well. It looks like
I think the weakest part of it is actually its design. It looks naff.
Look, it looks like Asus. That's why.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I mean they're like the. It'll do well for them for what they want to achieve. I'm not sure what they do want to achieve, because the weird thing is because they don't actually make it. I'm not sure how much money they make on it.
They don't make any money on it. They revealed today.
it's weird.
They make $0.
I'm not sure why they do it, because the weird thing is, I mean, the thing with when Microsoft Surface launched, which has pretty much been admitted, everyone's kind of agreed that they did it because they had a look around to see what everyone else was doing with Windows 8 tablets, and they were panicked because they all seemed a bit rubbish. So they thought they'd better set a benchmark, do something that is going to show the rest what you should do with Windows 8. Now, you could say, well, maybe they thought that. Maybe they thought they need to make a standard for Android tablets. But this doesn't actually do anything. It's got, you know, the insides are a bit better, I suppose, but it doesn't really do anything that other Android tablets don't already do. So
I love their demonstration of it. I mean, which proves what you were just saying. I mean, like, if anyone was following my live blog, you'll understand exactly. But I mean, like, they were showing stuff like, look, YouTube works super smooth on a tablet.
The YouTube app, yeah.
And I was like, wow, YouTube on a tablet. This is magic.
If you'd shown me this 8 years ago, I would have given a half a toss. Yeah, that's just...
And it comes with native Google Plus support. So what? I can message all my friends that are on Twitter and Facebook, not on Google.
That was the most amusing thing of the whole thing, actually, that they kept insisting that everyone uses Google Plus all the time.
Yeah, now you can just create Hangouts straight from Google Plus.
Oh, awesome. I guess I'll just hang out by myself then.
Yeah. Hey, guys, anyone want to hang out? You can create events before parties. So you guys can get together and just hang out on Google Plus.
Yeah. Quite scary, though, isn't it? I mean, the whole of the Jelly Bean stuff was very... This whole Google Now was very...
Quite a lot of the Jelly Bean... I'm probably misheard it, but the most concerning thing for me, I mean, like the privacy one, which is the Google Now that you're just saying, that one's a bit scary. But I think the worst one... is probably the how they got the smoothness of the UI in Jelly Bean. Because it's no big secret that no matter how good the Android phone or tablet, it's never as smooth as either iOS or Windows phone. Windows phone, I'd say, actually beats iOS in this regard. But that's obviously a software problem. It must be a software problem. Because, yeah. I mean, the processors are fast enough. But the way they said it, the way they said they've done Project Butter, was that they're turning on the CPU at full power for more time. And I was sort of sitting there thinking, isn't that kind of like a fudge of the whole, how do we make this smoother? That's not saying, oh, we've made it smoother because we re-engineered the code. That's basically them saying, oh, well, we'll use more battery.
Yeah, we chucked everything we could at it.
That's always actually the only Android tablet I've used that was any way smooth, and even this wasn't as smooth as like you're saying any other OS actually was the Sony one, whichever one isn't a clamshell. That's
the S2, I think, or maybe
I don't know what is inside that, but that seems to run it a lot better than anything else I've seen, which or anything else who runs it jaggedy.
Let's go to the new releases roundabout.
This delicious black energy drink is it's called Black, yeah.
Well, that was the klaxon. So that's one.
Did you buy that from Waitrose?
Oh, that's another klaxon. Thanks. Thanks, guys. You know, I actually have to pay for every time I use the klaxon. Again. Anyway, what is coming up in this week's new releases? It can't surely be as delicious as a Stella Artois.
This week on the new releases, we're in a kingdom of Cthulhu saving the world against Yellow and the Amazing Spider-Man.
I don't know why you do that. No one likes it.
Oh, thanks. Fine. Thank you. Thanks.
I've missed you, Keith.
I haven't, actually. I'm a bit fed up with myself.
Well, moving on from that...
I'm going to talk about it. We can't talk about this because I'm going to talk about it.
Okay, we can't talk about the first game, but it's Kingdom Rush is out this week. You're going to talk about it. I thought you'd already...
I'm not doing a presentation. I'm not doing a talk about it. I'm going to mention it.
If you hang on till after the podcast, Andrew will be giving a presentation on Kingdom Rush and the iPhone.
It's just a slide two.
Anyway, so you're going to talk about Kingdom Rush later?
Yes, I'm going to talk about Kingdom Rush later. Why are you so surprised? You know I'm a bit of a fan.
Not surprised, to be honest. Did you read my news story about it?
No, did you...
I wrote in it that you won't stop going on about it, so it completely fits.
Not often I like a video game, I don't know if you noticed, but I'm not video a big fan, game. Usually.
What is this, the 1980s, Grandad? They're called Electronic Entertainment, no.
What?
No. Universal app releases this week is Cthulhu Saves the World by Zeboid Games. Indie hit from the PC. It's a jokey RPG where you play as the evil, destroyer of worlds, Cthulhu. And to bring about the destruction of the Earth. So you're doing exactly the opposite of what you normally do.
Do you want me to give a little bit more depth as to what kind of RPG it is? Or
no.
No? All right, cool.
It's turn-based.
No. Okay.
It's based on Japanese RPGs.
Which one?
Breath of Fire.
No. It's based on Dragon Quest, listeners. It's old school Dragon Quest, basically.
Can they get sued for that?
No, it's not that. Anyway, it's £1.49 as a universal. It's well regarded among the best. And it's meant to be amusing. Thanks for that blowing of the nose.
I've got a cold.
Chasing Yellow is also out this week by DreamFab.
That's disgusting.
What?
Chasing Yellow sounds revolting to me. As a name.
I'm sure this was out before. Wasn't there another game of Yellow in?
Saving
Yellow. Yeah, this is the endless swimming one.
Oh, does he jump out the window? Oh, he jumps out the window.
It's brilliant. The voiceover's amazing.
Oh, that's quite good. This is the kind of game I can be down with. This is what the kids like. Endless runners.
Vertical, top down. Endless
top swimming. Up. I don't know. Yeah.
But, so that's 69p out now. It's got power-ups, it's got fish. Also out this week.
Why is he escaping from his owner?
Escaping from Matilda, because she's evil.
Hmm.
I guess. Maybe she mistreats him.
Mistreat a goldfish.
Yeah, I don't know. Pet it. Also out this week is The Amazing Spider-Man from Gameloft.
This is what the film's called as well, isn't it?
It is what the film's called.
Stupid name.
What?
Like Spider-Man.
I saw the trailer for this when I went... Well, not this, but the movie when I went to see Prometheus. It's the most embarrassing trailer.
Why?
It made the Batman one that followed look quite decent.
Right.
Spider-Man, I'd say, is the most overrated superhero.
He's a man. He is a man in a blue and red suit. When do you ever see a spider look like that for starters?
Stop it!
The only people who like that are people who go around going,
Right, good, okay.
I hate superhero games. He's, and movies.
It's called The Amazing Spider-Man because the Amazing Spider-Man was, I believe, the original line of Spider-Man comic books.
This is all getting a big bang theory for me.
It's not. It's popular culture, Keith! It's popular culture. This is Peter Parker 101.
No, it sounds all a bit nerdy.
The only good thing about this Spider-Man is the guy playing him was in Doctor Who once. So.
Oh, now you've torn it.
So The Amazing Spider-Man, open world web slinging adventures with everyone's favourite Spidey.
And it's by Gameloft. Oh, no.
25 different missions. I played a bit of this. It didn't look too bad.
Do I have to kill any gang members? Because I'm not. Yes. I'm not interested if I don't.
You do, yeah. You do actually have to kill gang members.
I hope so. Otherwise, I'd think, what the hell has Gameloft done? They've lost their soul.
And also, it's not a freemium game.
Oh.
Yeah.
Has it got in-app purchases?
It does have in-app purchases, but they're there to skip bits if you want to. It's not really a grinding one. It's more in this sort of It's more in the old school Gameloft mold, you know, back when they were just cloning.
There's some joke in Gameloft cloning and Spider-Man, but I can't quite figure out what it is. I can't get it. Nobody else get that joke? How Spider-Man's a clone? They thought it was a clone? The whole Ben Reilly situation?
Peter Parker, Ben Reilly.
This is another geeky joke.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
This is...
He's just a man in a city suit.
You've outwilled Will here.
Yes, well, that's out now. It's out for £4.99 or in dollars, $6.99, I think.
Yeah, whatever.
Well, I did tell you it wasn't premium.
Not paying that.
Yeah, no.
Chicken Doom is also out this week by Bulky Pix.
What Dog Box at the start.
What is it? What?
The Dog Box at the start.
It's published by Bulky Pix.
I like Dog Box. That's a good name.
It's a 3D tower defense game, so might be something Keith is interested in, where you defend against chickens attacking your mounds. And when I say mounds, I mean mounds. You have Bigfoot things which to defend them, I think. Yeah, and basically that's it. It's a nice little cartoony graphic, six different environments, power-ups.
Chickens attacking your mounds. Right.
Sounds like something that would happen in one of my infamous late night parties.
That's crabs, isn't it, with you?
Oh, yeah, good point. Crabs. £1.99.
He's got crabs on his mound. You can't leave that in.
I could. Yeah, no, I can. No. Frisbee Forever 2 is also out this week. Frisbee Forever 1 was well rated. Ooh, I've turned on the music. Killoo Games is behind this one. So yeah, you control a frisbee using a gyroscope across colourful and quite pretty looking islands through hoops, collecting stars, avoiding obstacles. Oh, I mean, it looks nice.
It looks lovely, actually. Very flower.
Yeah.
But without the art.
I like the stars.
It's free as well.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm getting that.
I could actually see your eyes light up, even by going.
Yeah, no, because it's
killing
the
industry.
It looks really good, like visually. Like, you know, I was being a bit snide about the whole art thing. The visuals look lovely, and it's. I do like that whole like tilt to fly kind of stuff. There aren't enough like flight sim-y or flight arcade.
Yeah, I like that control method as well. Yeah. I know loads of people who dislike it though.
Mm.
Probably Keith. Keith's
probably
one.
You need to hang out with those people, Will. Ditch those friends.
Ditch those losers.
75 tracks. Lots of different frisbees. Complete daring missions. Level up. Unlock every Whammo frisbee. By the way, Whammo and frisbee are all rights reserved. So there we go. It's free. That's worth checking out, at least.
Mm-hmm.
Mole Heart. Revenge of Stanton.
Good. What a great name.
Oh, it's a good name for the hero, though. You play as William, a brave warrior. Thanks, guys. Obviously, been reading up on my biography.
This is more Castle versus Castle, isn't it?
It is more Castle versus Castle, yeah. 2D one.
So it's a bit like Paladog, really. It
does a bit.
And various other Castle versus Castle games.
So, like, yeah. Sorry. Yeah. I'm not a big fan.
I know you're not.
It's free, though, and it's from Gameville, isn't it?
I bet you that's got an out of purchase in it.
Bet you it has as well. I bet you run out of energy really quickly.
Bet you.
And I bet you it really annoys you. I'm by asking that you to kind purchase of stuff.
It looks nice. It does look nice. I do like that art style. It's good.
Doodle Fit 2 Around the World is also out this week. By Namco.
Namco.
Bizarrely. I guess they published... They didn't publish the first one. They definitely didn't publish the first
one.
This
doesn't look very Namco to me.
No, that's what I mean. It's just like... this is like Sky Gamblers in that way. Was that Namco as well who published Sky Gamblers 2? I think it could have been. Let me just check. Because, yeah, no, it was the original wasn't... an indie game that was cloned on the Android market, one of the early ones. But now it's
you're
now
interesting. No one but yourself. Yeah,
I know. I'm just checking who. Yeah, Namco published Sky Gamblers: Air Supremacy, which is Revo Games. Again, that was another indie game that was then published for the sequel. It's interesting that interesting movement.
But they offered them lots of money.
Yeah, but it's interesting that they're diving in and looking for indie talent.
Doesn't really fit the brand.
I don't think Namco has a brand anymore.
No, they don't. No, they don't know what they are anymore, unfortunately. Which is a bit of a shame.
Yeah, they used to be pretty
yeah.
awesome.
It's been like Sega, really.
Yeah. Not much of Sega left after today's selling off of loads of European offices. Anyway, 69p, 99 cents. I didn't even say what it was, but... You know,
well,
we're running out of time.
All I can see is a start menu, I assume.
I think you get pieces. If I remember rightly, you get certain shaped pieces. You've got to form the shape that is being given to you. So you have to put them all together. It's fair. There's quite a few games out like it, to be honest. Gibbs and Laurie is also out this week by Thunder Gameworks. We have to throw zombies at British Royal Expeditionary Force.
What? It's unpatriotic.
That makes me so angry. When I see stuff like this, I just want to write a stern letter to my MP. It doesn't... But it is by the makers of Trenches. It just doesn't look... Everyone else is keeping very quiet.
I've literally nothing to say about it.
So yes, that's the midweek releases.
Well, we've been playing.
Hello and welcome. So who wants to go first this week?
Can I go first?
All right.
Okay. So you know how usually I like go back and play like old games that I've missed out on? Well, I decided this week that I would not do that. I would buck the trend.
No.
And I know. And I would play a very new, very recently released game, and I believe we've just put our review out. Asphalt 7, subtitle I don't remember, Heat. I've been playing that. And because I've wanted to play an Asphalt game for a while, and there have been quite a number of them. And I've also wanted to play it for a while because I reviewed, as probably regular listeners will know, I'm the handheld editor at PG. I reviewed the Vita version, Asphalt, another subject, Injection. I thought that was absolute trash.
That was rubbish.
Properly awful. Three, I think it got in the end.
terrible.
Anyway, so I picked this up. It's by Gameloft, and unsurprisingly, and the thing that I keep coming back to, and it was something that I noticed in the run up to its release, and what I've noticed people kind of talking about the series in general, there's a distinct phrase, and the phrase is on iOS or for iOS. And there seems to be this caveat that people put on the series. And I think in a wider sense in on iOS games in general, in that Asphalt gets away with being a totally serviceable racer. And it is. It's totally fine. But it gets away with being held up
Murder.
It gets away with being like put up on this pedestal because of this sort of this caveat that people put on it of, oh, well, on iOS, it looks really, really good. Like I was having a discussion with somebody on Twitter, and they were saying, oh, doesn't it look amazing? No, it doesn't. It looks like a high resolution PS2 game. And that's not actually that impressive. You know, I've dabbled with Infinity Blade. Now that is a good looking game, but when people sort of say things like, oh, it's the best looking racer on iOS. It's absolutely not. There's so much wrong with it. Lens flare does not a beautiful game make. The textures are a bit wobbly and a bit basic,
but they're reflective.
Exactly, and it's just like let's make the cars reflective. That'll look next gen. The crashes, which were part of the trailers leading up to its release, they're like incredible crashes.
the crashes are awful. Like you smash into a wall and you go spinning. Except for you don't go spinning. Your car just sort of grinds up against it and doesn't seem to move with the track and the sort of side railings. There's no actual gravity or physics going on. It's just your wheels have stopped and it's gone into a crash mode. And like, it looks awful. It looks really, really poor when it does that. But that's something that they kind of highlighted. There's no, it's definitely a facsimile of Need for Speed Hot Pursuit and Burnout and maybe one of the early PS2 Need for Speeds, like an Undercover or a title under one of those sort of lines.
Underground.
And but that's all it is. It's a facsimile of those things. It is a copy, and it doesn't actually do anything new. The announcer who. Will, I thought you were going overboard last week. I was like, oh, there he is, Mr. Wilson, going on all about how it's got a silly voice and, you know, that kind of thing.
She has a very silly voice.
She so does! Like you're listening to her and she's sort of going, wow, that was amazing. And it's like, that wasn't amazing because the game isn't challenging in any way. There's no sense of speed. There's no sense of danger. There's no sense of improvement or challenge because you're sort of toddling along at this childish pace. And the game seems to have this, to go back to this nuance idea, there's no finesse in the actual driving model. You're sort of steering left and right by moving the iPhone. It's got gyroscope controls, and it just feels like there are sort of invisible. It's like they're on Skeletrix tracks, but the channels are invisible. Like there's no.
Gotta say, in Asphalt 6's defense, because I did that one track competition, you know, get the best time, win a car.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I'm pretty good at driving games, and I wanted a car. But there are actually more nuances to the driving. Even though it feels like a really basic arcade one. You can extract like up to 30 seconds more depending on how you deploy it and how you take the tracks, which is quite interesting.
There is that. And I guess I'm kind of describing it poorly, but there's when you play something that this game is actually trying to do, because what Asphalt 7 is trying to do, and I'm sure the rest of the Asphalt series is probably trying to do as well, is it's trying to be a portable or, dare I say, a home console experience, but on iOS. And the difference is that there is more precision generally on those platforms than there is on iOS, and it means that you never really feel like that you're in danger driving. There's no feeling of the back end slipping away from you because you just feel like you're on a channel all of the time. And so to come back to this idea of there's some other criticisms as well. The multiplayer is broken in so much as, oh, you've got a slower car. Well, I guess you're going to lose. And there's basically no rules to sort of proviso over the top of that. So if you go in driving a Mini and you might well end up going up against a Ferrari Enzo. And it's like, well, I guess I'm just going to play this for 2.5 minutes with no chance to catch up. Whatsoever. The boosting mechanic doesn't particularly work. You keep boosting until you hit brake, but because you have to tap brake to drift, you'll just wind up going out of.
You don't want to drift at all.
But now the drifting works. If you soup the car up, the drifting works okay, and it builds up your drift meter. If you haven't souped your car up, it does feel as if you are driving on ice, and you just end up slamming into a wall. Now, the main problem, I think, is that I'm sure that this sounds like it's coming from a sort of place of snobbery, but it's not. There are amazing, as I've said before,
games on iOS, but they are games for iOS. And what Gameloft have made is they've made a game for console and they've decided to put it on a phone. And it just feels like it gets a free pass because it is trying to be more like these older traditional games. Whereas really, the platform just does not at the moment support it, or they haven't got the technical chops to make a game like that work on my phone.
I've got three things to say. Can I say three things?
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say is literally that kind of description there is that virtually any arcade iOS racer, all of that applies to. I mean, Asphalt is better than Need for Speed on iOS in general. I mean, the last Hot Pursuit got good reviews from some people, but I thought it was pretty abysmal in places. It's just as clunky, ugly as any of that. Asphalt on Java is really good because you've got buttons, even though you're doing something which is nowhere as sophisticated graphically as what could be achieved on iOS. As
Asphalt on Java does feel like you're going back into the Sega arcades the early 90s.
You really can control that. You can't do those kind of controls with the accelerometer and all that stuff, gyroscope, any of that on iOS. It just doesn't work like that. So it does get a bit of a free pass because of that, because they all do. If we're talking about any arcade racer, they're all a bit rubbish on iOS. I've not played one which you thought, wow, this genuinely could. I mean, I got criticized when I gave Sonic and Sega All-Star Racing a 10, but it was because it was the one, albeit it's a slightly different genre, but the one kind of fast-paced racer that actually did make you feel like it was designed for those controls and worked accordingly. Whereas all of these, as you kind of say, it feels like it really wants to be on a PlayStation 2.
The main problem for me is that if you're going to use gyroscope controls, i.e. if you're going to use the motion of a steering wheel, then you need to be in the car, because like shift works.
If I'm ever in a view car, I can't do any driving.
Oh, I know you've got to be in the view. They see I normally, because I got my, because listeners, I got my steering wheel set up at home, you know, so
line up, ladies.
It's a lot of tech. Sit down. switches to automatic and anyway. when I'm not wait, there was a point. When I'm not fiddling with my gear stick on the PS3 or on the PC, the thing is that you've got to have the first person view because the motion is so much like a steering wheel. So shift works. Shift 2 Unleashed works on iOS. I don't think any of the behind your car races work because you're tilting the whole screen. You're not when you're tilting it with the steering wheel, first person view, like tilting the wheel.
I just don't think you can get the fidelity you need really with any of those kind of controls.
No, I don't think so at all. I mean, like the actual driving games, when you were saying Asphalt feels like it was on rails, that's exactly the sort of feeling you get actually with Hot Pursuit on consoles. It's just that because the cars don't move that much when you press left or right, I mean the tracks are designed for that as well, but the whole thing is like if you're a real driving game, i.e. not arcade, then the whole sort of, you know, steering wheel thing where you have to pull back the wheel to start going the other way, that's actually more genuine controls than a digital joystick.
I just don't think when you do anything like this, the kind of the slight gestures you need, like if you're playing something like Burnout where living and dying is a matter of, you know, millimeters, you just can't get that on a touchscreen device. You can't do it. And all of these games, ironically, things like real racing stuff, you can do that on, because they're not slow, but they're slower and they're actual races. Things like this, where you're going to be powering down a highway and, you know, dodging left and right, and, you know, you can't do it like that. So they do get a bit of a free pass. But then, to be honest, it's kind of going back to what Infinity Blade gets a free pass, because if that was on console, people wouldn't play that. They'd play that for 5 minutes and say, well, this is a bit boring. It gets a free pass because of what it's on. And you do have to take these in a slight context. Asphalt doesn't really seem to change too much from one game to the next. And it does look a bit shiny, high-res-y. But in the context of these kind of games on iPhone, there are far worse.
Yeah, I mean, to finish up my sort of like semi-review of it.
Semi.
Semi-review of it. Femi. to finish up,
Nemi.
She would say semi, you know.
Yeah, she probably, okay, semi-review then. now, after all of that, to say that, like, this is probably one of the better arcade races that I have played, but I do have to qualify that by saying on iOS. Mm. And if I'm going to, you know, I'm the kind of person who has an iPhone. I've got a disposable income. If I want to play that kind of experience, Asphalt is not going to make me play. It's not going to make me play it on my phone, basically. But if that's all you've got, then go nuts, because I guess it's about as good as you're going to get.
I don't know. Actually, the Most Wanted looks good. My iOS version, played that before. At E3, was one of the fastest, as I've already mentioned on the podcast before. The second fastest. Even there was only one developer who beat me.
When's that out?
Later this year, I don't know. Probably around the same time as the console version.
Then I would like to revisit this conversation back then, at that point.
I've only played the demo, you know.
Oh, he's already making excuses now.
Yeah. Well, it was quite fun. And also the fact that I was so damn fast and so damn good.
Mm.
Yeah,
your problem is always you're a bit too quick. That's what people always say about you, Will.
That's what. Yeah, well, what has she been talking to you again? So I'm going to go really quickly. and now I'm going to talk about the games I've been playing this week. So, yes, really quick, because it's quite a long one this week. I've been playing... That's also... She'd tell you that as well. Lehev...
No, she didn't. She didn't.
Oh, damn. I asked her to. Le Havre is out. Le Havre? Or the harbour. Let's just call it that. It's the Dutch word for harbour. Anyway, harbour. But it's a town in France. Confusing. And even more confusing, the game is based on the board game. So, it's out on iPad. It's... tough. It's complicated. It's not Ticket to Ride and it's not Carcassonne. If you found Carcassonne hard, I remember reading Damien's review of Carcassonne and seeing the roads quite complicated, and I was sort of sitting there thinking, it isn't, it really isn't, that's going to get a flame. And sure enough, it did. But yeah, if you're a board gamer or not really a board gamer and you find Carcassonne hard, don't bother with this. I'm telling you now. It's a good board game. I mean, it's strategic, it's tactical. There's a lot of room for messing up your opponents. It's clever. It's a similar style in terms of how the turn progresses as Kalos, which is another game which, if you haven't heard of, then it's probably likely you'll find this game too tough. In the fact that you only get one move on your turn, and you will want to do about five. And then, you know, so it's always a bit of a... there's always a sort of trade-off between what you want and what you can get. You know, like life. Yeah?
Deep,
it's like the game of life, only it's nothing like the game of life. Don't follow that advice.
That's a good game.
Yeah, that is a good game.
Well, the harbour is also a very good game. But even for me, it took me at least two or three goes to get my head around it and start forming any tactics. And I mean, it's got play-by-play tutorial where it even explains to you why your opponent is doing what he's doing, which is kind of good. There's also a hint button which basically tells you what to do next, which is also handy, except for in multiplayer. I don't know why they've kept it in the multiplayer mode. You know, you can just press it and then it'll go, oh yeah, play this, now I'll do that, now I'll do this. It's like, I don't think if someone wants to learn in that way by cheating, you probably don't want to have that in the multiplayer mode. I mean, you won't go into... you'll do the tutorial, then you play single player, then you'll do multiplayer. I don't know why they kept it in. Anyway, but the actual board game itself is superb. If you can get over the vertical learning curve, it's very good, but it is really hard to understand. And moving on from that, I'll go quickly on CSR Racing, which is out this week from Natural Motion and Boss Alien, I think. X-Split Second developers, as in X-BlackRock. And as you might expect from the team behind Split Second, well, part of the team, it is a racing game. Although it's actually a drag racing game.
Okay, so dress up.
You'll be dressing up in skirts, fiery hats, and veils.
Oh, that's a joke waiting to happen. Someone should make a game called that, the drag racing.
They probably have. So yes, it's very much like that other freemium game, about drag racing in the sense that you you start off with a pretty rubbishy car. I started off with an Audi A1. Yeah. And you slowly upgrade it. You win drag races. You try and shift up your gears as you get to the optimum point, and you use your nitros and stuff like this. But it's always in a straight line. Each of the races lasts about 15 seconds. It looks gorgeous. I mean, the graphics are amazing. If you watched the WWDC presentation this year, you'd have seen it in action with the cross-platform multiplayer. That's the game. So yes, you win races and you upgrade your car, and then you, of course, then you can win more races and you upgrade your car a bit more, and then you can win a bit more. Yeah. If you want to buy a new car, you're going to have to pay money. So there's no way you can earn money to get a new car, which I've got a feeling is going to come back and bite the game in the backside, because there's five tiers. There's an actual sort of structure. There is an end. You've got to beat these gangs, yeah? Gangs are taking over the city.
A bit game left.
Yeah, well, you know. And they have silly names like Max Gearshift. And they challenge you, and you've got to beat them. And there's five tiers.
The problem is, Gearshift. That's his last name.
Yeah. I actually put this on Twitter, and then the guy who made up the name came back to me, because I said, why don't you just call him Max Speed? Because, I mean, there is a surname called Speed.
Yeah.
In real life. But he was like, no, too obvious.
Gearshift. Oh, you hear that all the time, don't you?
I've also suggested Miss D Clutch. You see, like, missing the clutch. Anyway. But the problem is you've got five tiers of racing, and you've got an energy system, so I can't tell you about the other tiers yet. But you can't buy any cars from any higher tier than one. So I've got a quite strong suspicion there's going to be a rather heavy brick wall after I get out of tier one. Because you can upgrade your car, but there's a limit to how far you can upgrade it. And there's almost certainly going to be a point where you're going to have to pay some money. So if you're expecting a free game, to be honest, it looks much better than a free game. I may splash some cash, 69p or something. Get myself a
A4, yeah. Pimp it up with some decals.
Drive around Tesco car park playing all of my Solid Crew. Is that what they're called? Solid Crew?
I think.
Is that what they're still doing?
21.
I play Garage really loud. I make trouble for the establishment.
So, yeah, that's it. It seems all right. I mean, like, it's worth checking out. Just the graphics are really nice. I'm just going to stress that again. They're really good. Keith.
Hello.
That's your been playing. Although you've got to keep it quick because we are running late.
Whatever. I don't actually have that much to say other than Kingdom Rush came out today. What's today, I think, wasn't it?
On iPhone.
On iPhone, yep. I can't remember, did I talk about it at the time? I can't remember.
Yes.
On iPad, yeah, is my favourite. Is my favourite tower defence game. It's brilliant. And I was a little bit apprehensive, actually, because one of the reasons it's so good is it feels... I mean, I think it was a Flash game originally, but it works very well on the iPad screen. It kind of, because of the animation, the drawing and so forth is so good, and it has a good sense of humor. It's kind of slightly, I mean, it goes through all kind of different stages, but it's meant to be slightly medieval, kind of dragony stroke, but in a cartoon sense. That some of the characters are so detailed that I was a bit worried about how it would fit on the screen, and later on there is so much to do. But having played the first couple of levels, it does actually work. Everything is obviously scaled down. But it's I haven't found myself hitting the wrong things or doing anything by mistake so far. So I think if you were going to get it, I think iPad is the one to get if you have one. But if you're after the best tower defense game on the market, then it works on iPhone. So that's pleasing. I've also played very briefly. Traffic Panic. Is it Traffic Panic London? Is it called Traffic Panic London?
Yeah, I think that's the name, yeah.
I don't know. I've not played. There was a Traffic Panic, apparently.
There was.
Which I've not played. So I kind of the trailer's all like pictures of London being blown up by cars hitting each other and stuff, and with the God Save the Queen playing, I think, and it's, you know, it's quite interesting. But like, as far as I can tell, it's just kind of one crossroads. So you tap the screen, what the one the road that's going horizontally has cars going across it all the time, and basically you tap the screen to turn the road going vertically green to try and get cars through the gaps. And as soon as one hits the other, then that's the end of the game. And then once that happens, you can then tap the screen repeatedly to make everything explode, just for a bit of a laugh, in a kind of burnout crash kind of way. But it's a weird compromise, because you're obviously trying to go as long as you can without them having any accidents. So you kind of letting them through and being very, you know, quick about it, just a little gaps between cars. But then the objectives are that you've got to crash 10 lorries or something. So once you do crash, then it wants you to make sure the crash is as big as it can be, I assume. So it's a bit weird, and you use the points you get to upgrade to unlock other vehicles that will stream across, but it's the same junction. So I'm not really sure if I'm missing something. Maybe
you're missing the chance to get through traffic.
I've played a very basic game where you control both sets of traffic lights, which I would kind of prefer. It's much more boring, because you can keep going for as long as you want, really, as long as you're
That sounds like the most pointless game ever.
But it's just like, there's a slight, I can't remember what the game's called, but there's a slight, I think I talked about it here, there's a slight challenge in that the traffic won't wait for too long, and if you leave them for too long, they just go through, which is, I'm not sure that happens in real life. But this one is more kind of literally just getting through the gaps, and there's always going to be an accident at some point, because you're not superhuman. And there's a slight issue, I think, because obviously you're only wanting them to be green for a split second sometimes, and sometimes it doesn't register the second tap that you make to turn them back to red. So you kind of get a lot of accidents that you feel really aren't justified. But I don't know. I mean, it's just one level, so I'm not really sure what you can... Unless, like I say, I'm missing something, and there is loads of others that I'm not seeing so far, but it's, you know... Traffic Panic London. I guess everything's a bit London at the moment because of that big sports thing that's about to happen.
Well, the Formula One Grand Prix.
they're going to do that at Olympic Park, apparently. Yeah. It'll be interesting, isn't it?
That'd be good. But that's it for this week. It has been a very long one. That's what she said, or whatever.
Not gone for as long as this is years, have you, Will?
No, I know. Normally I peter out after few seconds.
Can people stop using my name as a sort of derogative term, please?
Well, you know, if you're going to do a Peter, then
go on.
Then you get on. Out. Then get out of the kitchen. So thank you very much for listening. We will be back next week, where I'll be asking my guests how the cake's getting on. Thank you very much to my guests this week, who were Keith Andrew.
I was Keith Andrew.
And Peter Willington.
I was Peter Willington.
They're about to be taken out and disposed of. And we'll wish you a lovely week.
All right.
Bye, guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
There you go.